జయ గోపీ జనవాలా గిరివరధారీ జయ గోపీ జనవాలా గిరివరధారీ యశోదనందన బ్రజనరందన యశోదనందన బ్రజనరందన యమునా తీరవనచారి యమునా తీరవనచారి జయ రాధా మాధవ కుంజ బిహారీ జయ రాధా మాధవ కుంజ బిహారీ జయ గోపీ జనవాలవ గిరివరధారీ జయ గోపీ జనవాలవ గిరివరధారీ యశోదనందన బ్రజనరంజన యశోదనందన బ్రజనరంజన యమునా తీరవనచారి యమునా తీరవనచారి జయ రాధా మాధవ కుంజ బిహారీ జయ రాధా మాధవ కుంజ బిహారీ హరే కృష్ణ హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే జయ ప్రభు పద జయ ప్రభు పద జయ ప్రభు పద శిల ప్రభు పద ప్రభు పాద ప్రభు పాద ప్రభు పాద జయ జయ ప్రభు పాద
శ్రీ Prabhupada ki jam Vishwapada Paramahansa Parivijachari Astato Sashrimad A.C. Bhaktivanta Swamishwara Prabhupada ki Ananta Gaudi Vaishnavrinda ki Namashara Shri Haridas Thakur ki Premsakho Shri Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shama Kunrada Kundagir Godham ki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Ananta Gaudi Vaishnavrinda ki All grace assembled devotees. All grace Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All grace Shri Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottama devim sarasvatim vyasam tadodayam udiraye nasta preshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatya uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Verse 27, I believe. Do we have a book normally, or just if we do from the screen? It's here somewhere? Okay. All right, let me just pull it up. Where is it? There's so many books here. What's the verse number, Prue? 27, right? Yeah, it's chapter 19, 27. All right. So, in this chapter titled The Killing of the Demon Hiranyaksha, and I'm sure you all been just hearing about the whole pastime where Varahadev is fighting Hiranyaksha. And so at this point, he's definitely dead. This verse is all about that. And once we'll have the verse, we'll talk about it a bit. But yeah, Lord Brahma and others, they're on the spot, you know. They're all very terrified that there's this demon Hiranyaksha and he's, you know, terrifying the entire universe. He's put Mother Earth in the causal ocean, and what are we going to do? And at that point, then Varahadev appears, and he comes and he kills Hiranyaksha. And in the description where Hiranyaksha is finally killed, is described that Varahadev, initially, you know, he fought with him, and there was some back and forth, and then the demigods were a bit scared, you know, what's going on? You know, please just, like, wrap it up. And it's with Narsingadev's pastime also. And Narsingadev was fighting with Hiranyakashipu, and he was going back and forth, and the demigods were like, you're the Supreme Lord Vishnu, just kill him, just kill him, you know. And so with Hiranyaksha, it was the same thing. Varahadev was, you know, fighting, and they're like, please, you know, please relieve us of Hiranyaksha. And then finally, Lord Vishnu, Varahadev, he goes and he slaps him, and it's described in the root of the ear, and he slaps him there, and it's, you know, as it's described in the Bhagavatam, his eye sockets come, you know, eyeballs come out, and he just dies. And interestingly, I don't know how many people here are from India, but in India there's a saying where when you're really angry, you hit somebody under the root of the ear. And I always found it weird. I was like, no one hits anyone right here. And then when I read that verse, I was like, oh, it comes from Varahadev. That was the origin of it. He hit Hiranyaksha under the root of his ear. And then he just went and died. Also just goes to show that for Krishna or Vishnu, it doesn't take a whole lot, you know. You know, in the material world, people have all this drama. They fight back and forth. There's so many ups and downs and back and forth. But what Lord Vishnu, just, you know, one slap under the ear. And so that's this verse for today, where Lord Brahma and the demigods, now they're looking at the dead body of Hiranyaksha, and they're just looking at it, but interestingly, the body of Hiranyaksha is glowing. Let's see, okay, we have the, is that the verse? Yeah. So we'll do this Sanskrit for it. Shita sayanam tamakunta varchasam. Karaladam stram paridashta dachadam. Ajadayo viksha shasham suragata. Aho imam ko nulabhaita samstitim. Shita shayanam tamakunta varchasam. Karaladam stram paridashta dachadam. Ajadayo viksha shasham suragata. Aho imam ko nulabheta samstitim. Shita shayanam tamakunta varchasam. Karaladam stram paridashta dachadam. Ajadayo viksha shasham suragata. Aho imam ko nulabheta samstite. Please chant. Shita sayanam tamakunta varchasam. Karala damstram paridashta dachadam. Ajadayo viksha shasham suragata. Aho imam ko nulabheta samstitim. Shita sayanam takunta marchasam. Karala damstram paridashta dachadam. Ajadayo viksha sasam suragata. Aho imam ko nulabheta samstitim. Shita sayanam tamakunta varchasam. Karala damstram parijashitam. Ajadayo viksha shasham suragata. Aho imam ko nulabheta samstitim. Shita sayanam tamakunta varchasam. Karala damstram paridashta dachadam. Ajadayo viksha sasam suragata.
aho evam ko nulabeta samsitim. Shito sayanam dhammakunda varchasam. Karala damstram paridashta dachadam. Ajadaya veksha shasam suragatha. Aho imam ko nulabeta samstitim.
Let's do the word to it together. No, well, you do a call response. Shito. On the ground, Shayanam, lying, Tam, Hiranyaksha, Akunta, unfaded, Varchasam, glow, Karala, fearful, Damstram, teeth, Paridashta, bitten, Dachadam, lip, Aja Adya, Brahma and others. Viksha, having seen, Shashamshu, admiringly said, Agata, arrived, Aho, oh, Imam, this, Kaha, who, knew, indeed, Labheta, could meet, Samstitim, death. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Kijaya. Aja, Brahma, and others arrived on the spot to see the fearfully tusked demon lying on the ground, biting his lip. The glow of his face was yet unfaded, and Brahma admiringly said, oh, who could meet such blessed death? Purport. Although the demon was dead, his bodily luster was unfaded. This is very peculiar because when a man or animal is dead, the body immediately becomes pale. The luster gradually fades and decomposition takes place. But here, although Hiranyaksha lay dead, his bodily luster was unfaded because the Lord, the Supreme Spirit, was touching his body. One's bodily luster remains fresh only as long as the spirit soul is present. Although the demon's soul had departed his body, the Supreme Spirit touched the body, and therefore his bodily luster did not fade. The individual soul is different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he quits his body is certainly very fortunate. And therefore, personalities like Brahma and the other demigods eulogized the death of this demon. Om Gyanatimrandasagan Indanashlakaya Chakshurandasmay Shigurve Namaha. So, yeah, here Hiranyaksha, he's so fortunate that he actually was killed by Lord Vishnu. Can anyone remember a devotee who timed his death so that Krishna can be there at the time of his death? Anyone remember? Yeah, Bhishma Dev, yeah. He was so powerful. He was given this boon by his father that you can choose your time of death. And so even though he's laying on this bed of arrows, he chose that. Chose for the right time and chose for Krishna to be there. And so, yeah, for the yogis, it is important that they leave their body at a certain time. And for the devotees, it's even more important to be surrounded by Krishna or Vishnu or be surrounded by devotees glorifying Krishna. Because wherever there are devotees and Lord Vishnu's name is chanted, Krishna is there, Vishnu is there. So yeah, Hiranyaksha had the same good fortune that Lord Vishnu was there himself, and of course he killed him. And I was reflecting on this, and I was thinking of the times that when I have personally seen a dead body, and what it's like. And yeah, there have been times when there's a funeral and I was there, saw a dead body, and I was thinking, what did it feel like? What did it look like? And coincidentally, last night when I was driving home, the police had blockaded this part of the road, and as we were driving, we could see that there was a dead body on the road. And it was covered by a like a cloth or sheet or something. And something I haven't really seen in the U.S. That often. In India, it's more common. But here, I just saw it, and I was like, wow, this it was a little bit of a shock. But then I thought, well, it's not shocking. Death can come at any moment. You know, the accident had just happened. And I was thinking, it made me reflect on the verse itself. Like, what does a dead body feel like? Well, for one, I was thinking it's lifeless. And I was thinking when we rest or we just sit down, we might not move as much, but we can still feel, we can still some movement, the body's not just, it's never like fully steady, there's always some movement, we're breathing and so forth. But when you look at a dead body, firstly, the eyes, the light is just gone, right? And then there's absolutely no movement, like nothing. It's so still because it's basically a stone, it's a rock, and that's a dead body. On the contrary, here we see Hiranyaksha. He's dead, the body is dead, but there's a glow to it. There's a certain glow to it, and I was reflecting that, that's what happens when one way or other we come in touch with Krishna. In a sense, when we're not in touch with Krishna, it's like dead bodies walking around. What did they say? When someone knows that someone's in trouble and they're going to die, so they say, dead man walking. So it's like that. When we're not really in touch with Krishna, when we're not really in touch with our goal of life, then it's just, you're just ticking time bombs. And there might be movement externally, but internally it's just, there's no life. Bhaktisiddhanta said, if there's no preaching, there is no life. And it's true. And preaching doesn't just mean, going out there, of course that's preaching also, but also our own personal spiritual life. If that's not there, then the body is a soulless. And so, when we come in touch with Krishna, one way or the other, and sometimes when people come closer to death, then they're like, I gotta do something about the next stage of life. Maybe there is something more to life. Actually, it reminds me of my dear friend Amrita Kelly. Her grandfather, he was a World War II veteran, a pilot, Air Force pilot, and he was totally against her being a devotee initially. And she went to Vrindavan and did Bhakti Shastri, and I think she was there. There was a family gathering, she missed it, and he was like, "What are you doing there in India? You should be here with your family." But when he was dying, she was there for him. She gave him the Journey Home that had just come out that time, and he started reading it, and he just transformed this old crusty American World War II Air Force pilot. He just softened, and it's just a matter of a few months. He was so attached to the book. He had a picture of Radha Krishna next to him, and he would kiss it every night before going to bed. And just transformed, and she was there, as a Vaishnava, she was serving him at the time of his death. And just his life just transformed. It's a matter of last few months of his life. And we see that. I mean, we see that in the Bhagavatam, and we see that in real life also. When death comes closer, the person kind of realizes that, no, there is more to it. There is more to life than this. And as devotees, we are fortunate that we see that, not just towards the end of our life, but also throughout our life, that there is more to life than just going about our day as usual. And often there's complacency with people in general. People who are religious, the average religious person, they're like, we'll take care of it. When we're older, we're retired, and we're gonna give, in the Catholics, we'll give a big donation to the Catholic Church, and they're gonna give us the certificate. They used to give that, I think, the certificate of salvation or whatever it's called. Like, here's your certificate. You'll be going to heaven. Don't worry. Just give us a lump sum amount. And so the average religious person, and in India too, that's the idea. When you get old. My parents, they were disturbed when I joined the Hare Krishna movement quite young and gave a lot of my time and energy. You do this when you're old, later in life, and you have lived your life, enjoyed, worked hard, and retired. Then you do all this. Why are you doing this now? But actually, you're just a dead man walking if you don't do it right now. It is, it's, there's a saying, Kalakantapuru often says it, it's never too early to join the Hare Krishna movement. And it's never too late either. So whenever you can start, just go ahead. When you offer something, when you love someone, when you offer them something, would you offer them flowers that are kind of wilted and, you know, just like, oh, well, you know, I got them from for sale. It's 80% off from Publix. So I got these really nice old wilted flowers for you. No, you don't do that. You want to go and find the best flowers that you can, the best fruits or whatever it is. You give a gift that's in its prime to your beloved. The same with Krishna, you know. When we are in our prime, you know, whatever stage that is, whenever we come across Krishna consciousness, we give it to Krishna. He's our beloved, Radha Shyam Sundar. Whatever we have in whatever shape and form, you know, just give it right now, right now. There's no delay. There's no question of delay. Otherwise, we're just dead body walking around. And not to be down on the people out there, but there's certain life comes to us when we come in Krishna consciousness and when we share Krishna consciousness with others. I remember when we'd go on Harinams after the football games in the night, and we would see all these people decorated with different, you know, makeup and all that. And they would all look so beautiful and fancy, but their eyes were not quite alive. But when they would see the devotees, you know, I would see the students, and like a smile would come on, at least on some of their faces, a smile would come on their face, and I would think like, yes, now you're alive. Now you have life. About 10 years ago, I was in Israel. I had a study abroad semester over there. And there used to be this group of devotees, they're Russian Jews, and they would do a weekly program, and I'd go to that. They would speak in Russian, but I would still go because it's still devotees and there's still some prasadam. So I'd go there, and then I would take a bus back to the university. One fateful night, I was there by myself, and there was this young person next to me, and we were starting to talk, and he asked me, he was Muslim, and he was a bit intense about it. And he asked, so what are you? Who do you worship? And then he goes, do you worship God? I said, yeah, I worship God. I said, or do you worship trees? I was like, well, we worship Tulsi. But like, no, we worship God. Don't freak out. And then I was quite freaked out. It was in the middle of the night, you know, so I didn't want to argue with this guy. So yeah, we worship God. We got in the bus and we were talking. And I used to give people the Krishna.com card, and I would write my information on it. So I gave it to him. And he looked at it. It was a picture of Radha Krishna and the Maha Mantra. And this young Muslim guy was quite fanatic about God, started reading the Maha Mantra really loudly. He was like, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. And he was like, and he turned the card and he saw a picture of Radha and Krishna, and he was like, who is this? You said you worship God. Who is this? So I started to myself, well, he's honestly asked who Krishna is, so I have to explain it to him. So I said, well, there's three aspects to the absolute truth. There's the impersonal, the super soul, and then there's the personal form. And this is the personal form. I started explaining. I was like, okay. And he was asking questions. And then, you know, he was asking more questions. He was more intrigued now than adamant about worshiping God in a certain way. And so... he asked me, what language is this? And I said, it's Sanskrit. And he said, okay. And he said, well, if I want to go to my friends and want to say some words in Sanskrit, what would I say? And I said, it's easy. You go to them and you say, Gauranga. And he said, Gauranga. And, you know, just to the point that when he was saying that, life came to him. And then a few bus stops down, we were downtown in downtown Haifa in Israel. And this friend of his came on the bus from downtown, and she was obviously coming from a party. And she came, just started talking in Arabic. And I was just sitting there. And all of a sudden, he pulled out that card. And he was like, look, that's Krishna. Isn't he beautiful? And I was like, what happened here? This fanatic Muslim guy. And I was like, isn't he beautiful? And she looked at it. And she turned the card and she saw the Maha Mantra. And her eyes got big. And the same thing, yeah, life came to her. I just still remember, I'll always remember her expression. And she started reading the Ma Mantra. She also, like him, she's like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. The whole thing, they read the whole thing. And then, yeah, just her eyes got big and she looked at me and she looked at the card and she looked at him. And then I started explaining, you know, Hare means this, Krishna means this. And then the other guy interrupted me and he was like, and Rama means this. I was like, okay, go ahead, explain it. And but yeah, to that point that, yeah, life comes to us when we are in touch with Krishna, when we are practicing Krishna consciousness. And as I was driving here, I was appreciating, yeah, there is a group of people who wake up early in the morning and they sing and they dance God's names. And I was like, how rare is that? You know, how rare is that in today's age? And there's this ministry we have at the university, campus ministry, and it, you know, we're part of it, and there's other pastors from other churches, Christian, mostly all Christians and Jews and maybe one Muslim. And we used to invite them to come, you know, come to our morning program, check it out, you know, check out the Krishna house. So we told one of these pastors, she was Christian, and we said, yeah, please come to our sermon in the morning, you know, it's in the morning, please do come. And she was like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll come, you know, it'll be great. And she goes, what time is it? And we said, oh, yes, you know, the sermon starts at 7:30. She goes, 7:30? Ah! So, and so even those who are practicing some sort of religion out there, for them to be up in the morning and start their day with chanting God's names is quite an endeavor, but to speak of the regular folks out there. And so, yeah, it is special that, you know, there's the devotees do this early in the morning, and I was just appreciating that. But that's what gives us life. That, you know, otherwise, what else is out there that gives us life? And I was also thinking about when Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha's brother, you know, he had Prahlad Maharaj, right? And Prahlad Maharaj is such a great devotee. And Hiranyakashipu, he everybody was scared of him. He was so powerful. Is described that he would just look this way, you know, to the side glance, and all demigods would shiver, like, oh my God, you know, is he going to do something now? And so he was so powerful. And so was Ravana. And so all these powerful personalities, and Hiranyakashipu, he was thinking that all these powerful demigods are scared of me. They will do whatever I say, even before I say anything. But this child, he does not listen, you know. Typical parental problems. Like, this child of mine won't listen to me, and he's not scared of me. And that made him scared. Like, what is he depending on that's not making him scared of me? So he asked him, where does your power come from? Where does your strength come from? And Prahlad Maharaj is such a genuine devotee. Of course, we all know, but just the way he answers, it's so genuine. He just honestly answers him, and he says, Bhavatasme Rajan, that you also, my strength comes from where your strength comes, from Vishnu. And it's such a genuine answer, because Prahlad Maharaj knows that Hiranyakashipu has been saying it out loud forever, that Vishnu is my enemy, I'm going to kill him, I'm going to do this to him, Vishnu is envious of me, Vishnu supports the demigods, doesn't support us, you know. It keeps going on and on throughout in the Bhagavatam. And Prahlad Maharaj knows this, and he still honestly and genuinely answers that my strength comes from the same place from where your strength comes from. Imagine looking at a powerful, envious person and telling him, your strength comes from your enemy. So he did that. He genuinely answered it, honestly. He wasn't scared. He wasn't scared of Hiranyakashipu. And so, in this material world, sometimes we think our strength comes from ourselves, like we are all in all, our life comes from ourselves, you know, like this, essentially this dead body thinks that everything we have comes from us, it's sourced from all our mind and intelligence and so forth, but all that is also part of that dead body, essentially. It all comes from Vishnu, it all comes from Krishna, that part and parcel of spirit soul, it comes from Lord Vishnu. And when we recognize that, then real empowerment and strength comes. And Prahlad Maharaj recognized it. He was just a child. He was being abused. He was thrown off the cliffs. Elephants were about to trample him. So many things. But he was so empowered because he recognized that his source of strength comes from Lord Vishnu. And that's why people in the world are so materially puffed up. They're like little Hiranyakashipus, like a little bit. And then they think, yeah, I'm so powerful and I've achieved so much and so much more I'll achieve. And I'll vanquish this person, I'll vanquish this and that. But there, it really is insecurity, actually. Real self-esteem comes when we realize that, yeah, actually, Krishna is all-powerful. And since we are part and parcels of him, he loves us unconditionally. And when he wants to empower us, he empowers us, you know, and we rely on that. And Prahlad Maharaj relied on that. So he's a great devotee, he's a great Mahajan, and he was alive. He was really alive, unlike the other people who are just not quite alive, who don't really know how this world works, how Krishna works, how Vishnu works. And so it's our purpose, it's our duty, and it's our privilege to really be able to share that with others, you know, we share it with the students at University of Florida, that, yeah, wake up, spirit soul, you know, here's some halwa, eat this, it'll wake you up. This prasadam, this will wake up your spiritual life. And any little thing they do, any little appreciation they do of prasadam or devotees wakes up their spiritual life. And that's the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. I was thinking about that too. Lord Chaitanya, you know, when with Jagai and Madai, he was ready to kill them. You know, he was getting into the Nrisimhadeva and Varaha mode. He's like, I'm going to kill these demons. They attacked Nityananda and my, you know, dear Lord Nityananda and great devotee. Like, they attacked him, and I'm just going to kill him. And Nityananda said, no, Lord Chaitanya, do not do it, because your avatar is for saving these kind of people, not just, you know, it's just a different mood. You know, you have to show how these people can be saved. And so he killed their demoniac mentality instead. He killed their demoniac mentality when it's described that when Lord Chaitanya, he hugged one of them, I forget which one, Jagai or Madai, he hugged them. And they were so sinful that Lord Chaitanya started turning into, you know, he started absorbing all their sins, and his golden luster faded. They were so sinful. And so then he had to, I believe he went to the Ganges or somewhere, and he bathed in there, and the luster came back. I remember hearing that in a lecture by Radhanath Maharaj. But yeah, that was his mercy. And we are in that line. So we can also kill that demoniac mentality, just like Varahadev and Lord Nrisimhadev and Lord Chaitanya. But we do that by sharing Krishna consciousness. And I think he said that there was another time where Lord Chaitanya said that, I'm going to go, when, what's his name, Qazi. The Qazi was banning Sankirtan movement. And he came, broke the Mridanga, and told the devotees, you better not sing this. You better not chant Hare Krishna. And so then when the devotees came to Lord Chaitanya, and he said, I'll kill these Muslims. And it wasn't with the idea that he was going to kill them, but like just kill this mentality that one should not glorify God. That was his point. And so the same idea is there, that, yeah, we can go root out this demoniac mentality, bring a revolution in this world. The Srimad Bhagavatam is therefore meant for bringing a revolution in the lives of people, as that famous verse is there, Tadvag Visargo Janataga Viplava, that Viplava that brings a revolution in people's hearts. That's the biggest change one can really bring in people's lives. You know, I studied political science, did my bachelor's, and there was a line that I really liked. It said, the personal is political. That our personal lives, you know, is political. Meaning that whatever we do in our own life, even regular people see that, whatever we do in our own real life makes a huge impact in the world, you know. Just us, just devotees being here in the temple, just chanting Hare Krishna, doing sadhana in the morning, it actually makes a huge impact in this world, because it's so rare. And it might feel like, oh no, we're just here, you know, in a farm or something, but no, actually makes a huge impact. And it brings about a revolution in people's lives. And yeah, this must go on for generations, for the hundreds and thousands of years, as Prabhupada has said, because that's what will make people alive, you know. And yeah, problems come in people's life, but then they can see that, yeah, these problems, you know, Krishna comes as a hug, or sometimes he comes like a slap under your ear, right? And so we have to educate people that, no, don't worry. Whatever shape or form Krishna comes in, it's Krishna. And when Srila Prabhupada was in Calcutta when Japan was bombing, right, they were coming from the east, from the Far East, and they got almost all up to Calcutta, and they're bombing Calcutta, or Kolkata as it's called these days. And Prabhupada was, I believe there's different versions. He was frying pakoras or samosas or kachoris, whatever he was frying. He was frying something, he was making prasadam. And yeah, Prabhupada just, he didn't bother, he didn't go to the shelter. And Prabhupada later said that, yeah, I just saw these bombs as Krishna, you know. And so that's really far out, see bombs as Krishna. For me personally, if I can just, when I stub my toe, if I can just see that as Krishna, like, that's a big deal. What to speak of seeing bombs as Krishna. But yeah, any problems that come in our lives, yeah, if we can actually see that as coming from Krishna, and not that, yeah, this problem has come, but, you know, later it will bring me good fortune. It might or it might not. But the good fortune every problem brings in our life is that it brings us closer to Krishna. It makes us remember Krishna. So that's the biggest fortune that we can have. And so, yeah, sometimes things happen in our life, and like in Hirnaksha's life, he got killed. Things happen in our life, but because he got killed by Krishna, he was still glowing. He had that boon of being killed by Krishna. Like Mahatma Prabhu was mentioning yesterday about Aho Bakiyam, Putana is Baki, the sister of Bakasura. And so Putana was killed by Krishna, but Krishna took it so kindly that this woman came to feed me, even though it was poisoned milk. This woman came to feed me. She's like my mother. And so he gave her the position of a nurse. So when we are able to see any calamity as coming from Krishna, then it totally transforms it, and we get closer to Krishna when we remember him in that way. But yeah, even when Ravana was dying, actually. When Ravana was dying, does anyone know what Lord Ram did when he was dying? What did Ram say to Lakshman what to do in that time? He told him to go and get lessons from Ravana, actually. He said, Ravana is a great king, he's a great Brahmin. Go hear from him as he's dying. So when Lakshman went to Ravana, and there's many things that Ravana said, and Ravana said that, I realized that Lord Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I realized that. He said that I was proud of my knowledge, but Lord Ram has knowledge about pride. Ahankar, actually, that's a specific word to use. Ahankar. I have ahankar of my knowledge. So this false ego, that this knowledge is mine, that I have this knowledge and I can, you know, apply it, or I'm so knowledgeable. I had ahankar. But Lord Ram has knowledge about ahankar, how false ego works and so forth. I found that very intriguing, that he put it that way. And of course, there's many things he said. So yeah, you know, we can get our lessons from anyone, even from Ravana as he's dying. Lakshman got so many lessons about about how to run a kingdom, or just in general about who Lord Ram is. And that's Krishna's role. And Krishna feasts on our false ego. Krishna loves it when our false ego is, you know, it's material. It's like, it's boga. It needs to be offered. And that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. We might come to Krishna with so many desires. We do come to Krishna with so many desires. And sometimes we don't even realize that we are coming to Krishna with all kinds of desires. But we come to Krishna as this, with our body, mind, and false ego, this basically these material elements. But the beauty of it is that when we offer to Krishna, and that's what we gotta tell people, like, does not matter what your desire, does not matter where, that was Prabhupada's mode, did not matter where people came from, however, you know, fallen or just disturbed as a person they were. He was, it did not matter to Prabhupada. It didn't, so it shouldn't matter, like, wherever people come from, whatever desire they have, maybe they wanna be popular or whatever it is, just do it for Krishna. just do it for Krishna. Come, just chant for Krishna, sing for Krishna, yeah, just do whatever. And the beauty of it is that Krishna is so intelligent, he uses our false ego, he eats up that ahankar, and he uses that so intelligently to transform our heart and to clean our heart And we don't even realize what Krishna is doing. And all of a sudden, after many years, we realize, oh, that's what was going on. Krishna was really clearing this one deep-rooted material desire that I didn't even really know I was acting on it. He was really clearing it out in such a loving way. And that is Krishna's touch. So for devotees, you know, for demons, Krishna, you know, gives a little snap under their ear. But for the devotees, Krishna very gently and kindly clears those misgivings, those desires, and so forth, while engaging us in his service. Krishna never rejects anyone. It's pretty far out, actually. He just never rejects anyone, with whatever ambition or desire, we all have different things in our hearts. But Krishna is like, oh, he's just so grateful. I mean, it just reminds me of Mahatma Prabhu's class yesterday. He's just so grateful, like, you're here, and I love you, and you're here, and I'm just so happy to have you. Don't we all love those people when we show up, and they're like, yeah, I'm just so happy you're here. We love you, you know, thanks for coming, and, you know, here's some prasadam. We always love. That's what really nurtures us in our lives. And so it comes from Krishna, because Krishna is like that. And so he doesn't really see any, like, oh, like, you're here because, you know, oh, you're one of those four people, you know, for the four kinds of people I talked about in the Bhagavad Gita, or, you're one of those, huh? And so he doesn't say that. He's just happy that we're there. And he's just happy that we're there, and he revives our life. He revives our glow in our life. And so that's also our purpose. In that mood, we just go out there and we share this with others, and we see it time and again. This life comes to people, and actually, when we do that to others, more life comes to us. As I repeat, as Bhaktisiddhanta said, if there's no preaching, there's no life. And so when there's preaching, there's a lot of life, there's a lot of joy, there's a lot of life in our eyes. And when we do that, when we do our morning program, when we do our sadhana, when we chant, and when we do all this, when we go out there, people notice that, people can see it. You know, there was this policeman, I believe, in London. He saw Prabhupada and he pulled aside one of the devotees and he was like, he's glowing. And of course, Prabhupada's glowing. So people notice it. So yeah. So that's the touch of Vishnu. It can bring life to our hapless, dead life. So yeah. I'm going to end here. Any thoughts? Because this note says 8:45. So yeah. Any thoughts, reflections, questions, comments? Before I ask Devaprastha Prabhu to make a comment. Oh, there's one. Go ahead. Yes, Prabhu. Oh, okay. Sure. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for the nice class.
Thank you.
I just, because you were speaking about the glow of Hiranyaksha, and so I just wanted to take a minute to glorify Mother Indrani. Do you remember Mother Indrani?
Yeah, I remember.
She was an older devotee. She left her body a few years back. And I was there, you know, when she was in the process of leaving and when she left. And that was very auspicious. And then there was a long time between the day that she left and the day that they were able to do her cremation, just because of the hospital, whatever. And she didn't want her body to be seen. Like, that was her request, to not have that kind of funeral with the viewing and all of that. So I didn't see her again after that, but I heard from the two devotees that took care of her body, which were Mother Nanda and Chaturatma Prabhu, that even after so many days, how her body was still very supple. Mm-hmm. And that she had some kind of glow. Mm-hmm. Also, and I just wanted to share that, because she was such a nice example. She joined the movement at a late age, in her 60s, but she took her Krishna consciousness very seriously, and she was very surrendered to her spiritual master and to Srila Prabhupada, and she would give class even though it was challenging for her, and so many things. And so I just wanted to share that. I mean, I won't speculate, you know, where she went or whatever, but it just seems like she had she definitely moved up. Mm-hmm. And she was a very nice devotee.
Thank you, Prue. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, I remember Mother Indrani, and she was always so full of joy, and in Krishna consciousness. I remember I spent a whole Janmashtami with her the whole day, and the whole day I was a young devotee, I was new, and I was sharing all my problems, and she was like, have faith in Krishna, just have faith. So I built a lot of faith in me. Yeah, thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for your class. It was really wonderful. It reminds me that the topic of devotees having this life and glow to them reminded me of something I experienced. So I grew up in New Vrindavan, surrounded by devotees my whole life. And when I went to college in Columbus, I was around non-devotees for a really long time without seeing any devotees for quite a period of time. And I remember I was in an art supply store, and a brahmachari from the Columbus Krishna House walked in, and he had such an effulgence to him. I was so struck after being around non-devotees for so long and seeing this devotee walk in, and he just had this glow and effulgence, and I was just so struck. And it was kind of like the beginning of my journey in realizing how special the devotees were, and it took me being away from them to realize that.
Yeah, thank you. There was something here, I believe.
The point you made about offering everything, including the false ego, was really satisfying, because in the beginning of my Krishna consciousness, I had the misconception that I had to rid of my false ego with as much whatever anger or whatever force, you know, just rid of my false ego, just get rid of it. It's nasty, it's gross, just get rid of it. It's unwanted. But you said that no, even, you know, offer my false ego to the Krishna. So that's satisfying, that's reassuring, it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, we could just go to Krishna and be like, this is who I am, these are my qualities and, you know, good or bad, but I really want to serve you. So please engage me. And he engages us in a way that purifies us further. So yeah, whatever we have, just offer it. Yeah. Yes, bro.
Hare Bhagavad. Thank you. Nice class. Thank you. Christians usually highlight the power of Jesus. They would say that he bring the dead back to life many, many times. You know, and they would challenge, you know, they challenge other religions. What have your God done? Has he ever done? Has he ever brought back the dead to life? You know? So I like to ask you this question. Do you know of cases where...
Wait, so they say that Jesus brought people back from dead?
Right.
He did?
Yeah.
I never heard that.
You know? So do you know of cases where, Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu...
has brought somebody back from dead from life, dead from death to life? I feel like there's something out there. Shivas Thakur's son, right? Yeah, brought him back.
It's good to know. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Harsh Ashoka too. Yeah.
It's good to make a note of it and keep it.
Keep it.
Yeah. So if you have a challenge, you can say, "Oh yes."
Has all these instances. Yeah, and I guess one time there was this Christian, he was nice about it, but he was saying, do you know anyone else who's come back from death, you know, like how Jesus can resurrected? And I was like, well, there is Haridas Thakur. And I told him about the whole pastime, and he was like, okay. So he was very humble, so he was like, okay. And I was like, I didn't know, there was other places too. But yeah, so it was Haridas Thakur also, who himself came back. Yes, Prabhu. Of course, yeah, Chitraketu's son, Harsha Shoka, yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. A few days ago, we were talking about the importance of sadhu sangha, how critical that is. And this is, you know, a topic, so please forgive me if you're in class and I'm in class and I'm asking similar questions over and over again. But, you know, in Kali Yuga, both demoniac and devotee tendencies exist in us, right?
Yeah.
And sadhu sangha is so important. So I'm wondering, as I engage in sadhu sangha and associate with the devotees, how do we navigate absorbing and trying to just associate with those devotional tendencies of that person and not get entangled with or affected by whatever demoniac tendencies or subtleties might be there.
Of the other person?
From the other person.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I remember it's in the Bhagavatam somewhere. There's different levels of a sadhu. You know, initially, in the initial level, maybe Pran Govindapuru remembers more than I do, but initially, like, the person just, you know, kind of just sees the faults in others. That's all we can see, right? And but then as we grow, then it kind of, it really depends on our own Krishna consciousness, because there'll always be something out there that really, really disturbs us. It's always something, for sure. But yeah, Prabhupada talks about it in one of the purports where, our level of our sadhu-ness, as maybe I will call it that way, our sadhu-ness increases. And then the next stage is we're able to see that, okay, there's something good in this person. There's something bad. All right, okay. Let's talk about the bad a little bit sometimes. And then, talk about the good a bit sometimes. And the next level is like, we say, okay, there's good and bad. I'm going to primarily focus. I can see the bad, but I'll focus on the good. Because, that's what you're supposed to do. So there's that level. And then as we grow in our Krishna consciousness, we're able to see that we see mostly the good. And there might be some bad, but as it just really actually depends on our Krishna consciousness and how we want to look at things. And it's just also internal. And of course, if somebody's being really too rowdy, whatever, if they're just abusive or something, then maybe that should be reported. That's a whole other realm of things. But in general, everybody, is a mixed bag. But it really is such an internal thing. That's my reflection. It's been over the years that my mind specifically can focus on this one bad thing this person does, and it just keeps like reeling, like focuses on one thing. So over the years, I've had to realize, wait a minute, this person also does so many good things. They have so many good qualities. And sure, they might have one or two or some other things that are not so great. And let me focus on just so many good things that they do. And it really boils down to having some compassion for others. And I know it's hard to have patience, personally speaking, but having compassion because we were probably that person in our previous life. Ravindasur Prabhu was talking with me and he was telling me about so many things, dramatic things that have happened in the past 60 years in ISKCON. And he was saying, but remember, you might have been that person in your previous life. And now you're here again because you've done some service and you have the chance of doing, having some association. So he was like, just don't take it too seriously. Whatever, something that somebody does or they have so many ill qualities, just have some compassion, have some, give them some space that, they're also in the shower. And to be honest, it's really for us, for our own peace of mind. And I know it's hard. So sometimes, you just got to go talk to a mentor or something and just really, that's what I do. And I'm like, Prabhu, this is on my mind. This person's doing this. What do I do? And at least just reveal our mind in confidence to somebody. That helps a lot. But as we grow in our spiritual life, we got to get to that level. So gradually, we come to the level where we're just able to see good qualities in people. And there might be bad, or we're not able to really see that much. And it takes time. It really does take time. I mean, Prabhupada said 40 years, right? Before we become a pure devotee after 40 years of chanting. And so, there's a class by Gaura Gopal Prabhu on fault finding, and maybe I'll share that at some point through some medium. But I made a little sheet based on his class, and it's really good and it kind of addresses this point. And this fault finding will always be there, but how do we just gradually evolve? And boils down to, if I do this, if I think or act like this, will it bring me closer going back to Godhead or not? Irrespective of what this person is doing, will it take me back to Godhead if I say this one thing or do this one thing, It does boil down to that eventually. Anyway, these are some thoughts. Anyone else have any thoughts? Yes, Prue, please. Do you have a mic there? Or sure, go ahead. I think it's maybe for the online audience, perhaps, the mic.
Yeah, sometimes we use the word sadhu sangha kind of loosely in our common parlance. But sadhu sangha and Vaishnav Maitri are two different things. Vaishnav Maitri means our friendship among peers and devotees or aspirants. And in that Maitri, in that friendship, just like in even in the material world, in friendships, there will be some good qualities, some bad qualities. There's some things that may rub us the wrong way. We may rub them the wrong way. Mm. So in Vaishnav Maitri, Prabhu is saying, and I agree, we should be tolerant. We should try to find the good. Sadhu Sangha, Jiva Goswami has explained it. Sadnoti sadayati cha Krishna prem iti sadhu. A person who's generally a sadhu and we want to do their sangha, which means samyak rupena anugamana, to fully give your heart to that person has Krishna prem. So real sadhu means like your guru. Other people, we have Vaishnav Maitri. So even when it describes like a Madhyam Bhagavat devotee, it says prema Maitri kripa upeksha. So Maitri is that category of friendship with various levels of devotees. And we may find some discrepancy here or there. They may find that in us as well. So when we give emphasis to sadhu sangha, it means who has some realization of Krishna prema. Because you cannot do samyak rupena anugamana means to give your heart fully to that person. And if you have doubts, faith, criticisms, you cannot do that to that person. So it's not truly sadhu sangha.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thanks for sharing that.
All right. Well, I have one more question. The association of the sadhu sangha of the devotees, that there is only the positive vibes, we will get it, right? So instead of the negative or the thoughts, whatever the thing is, we only association with the positive.
Could you speak a little more clearly? I can't quite grasp the question.
No, the thing is, only the positive, the vibration, we will get more when associate with the sadhu sangha. That's what association with the associate. We don't go for the bad thought. That is, the bad thought is don't come. That is the good thing, right? Here, that is my question.
Yeah. When we're there with, bhakti comes from bhakti. So if you want bhakti, you have to go to somebody who has bhakti. So you get that bhakti from the sadhus, as Prabhu was saying. And that's the boon of Srila Prabhupada, of the Hare Krishna movement, that there's all these sadhus, you can go and get bhakti from them, because they carry that. You can't get it from anywhere else. You can get it from the books also, but you got to get it from the person Bhagavad. So yeah. All right, I guess it's time to end. Grantarashimad Bhagavatam ki, Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.